Our next speaker is Dr. Chad Tingey. He graduated from Brigham Young University and Dartmouth Medical School, completed his internship at the University of Nevada in internal medicine, his residency at Loma Linda University of Medical Center in dermatology, a fellowship at the Scripps Memorial Hospital in Mohs surgery. Dr. Tingey is a dermatologist at Ogden Clinic. He enjoys spending time with his wife, four kids, playing racquetball, biking, hiking, reading, exploring the Utah's wilderness. Dr. Tingey is also fluent in Spanish. Dr. Tingey.
Good morning, everyone. I'm very excited to talk to you this morning. I think that dermatology actually applies to everyone in here because I would believe that it's probably the most commonly asked question to any practitioner, which would be different than Rob Wayman's world, probably. But the common, hey doc, does this look okay to you, it happens to everyone. So anything that we can do to elucidate the field of dermatology and skin would be very helpful. I would say that I met with an orthopedic surgeon recently and he said, dermatology, I don't know, it seems like all you guys do is voodoo. So if we can help so shine a little light on what we do and what's new in our world, then that would be worth it. I don't have the slide quite up yet. They gave me the 1 minute finger. Perfect, except for that it's the other slide. While I'm waiting, I just want to point out the fact that Rob Wayman said Swiss cheese approach to the penis in front of all of us this morning. And that's something that we shouldn't all forget. That's a tough talk to give, and I think he did a good job, and I think that getting active surveillance, which meant a rectal exam every 3 months with Rob Wayman, may make a guy want to consider surgery instead. Can I just go off Rob Wayman's slides? Do you want me just to use that one? Oh, good. Not good, but. I can actually do a talk without slides. I offered to cut my talk. I said, you guys, it's just skin. They said to go ahead with it, so we're gonna go ahead. A little bit about me, I'm actually not a local guy. I was born and raised in Las Vegas. Reason that's important is I really wanna compliment Ogden and this area. It's partially in a response to a lot of work on behalf of a lot of you. This is a desirable place to live and it attracts new and fresh and upcoming people because I am new and fresh and upcoming. I went to BYU, that's a college down south of here, and if you've heard of it, I married a Utah girl, therefore I now live in Utah. I attended Dartmouth Medical School, lived in New Hampshire, started medical school planning on trauma and orthopedics and found out I was very interested in skin. Did a general internship year at the University of Nevada. A lot of car accidents and trauma and a lot of overdoses on drugs and a lot of people who eat too much at the buffets. That was surprisingly common every night to have a obstruction in the esophagus from too much steak. I then went on to do my residency in dermatology. The skin has a lot going on to it. One of the cool things in dermatology at Loma Linda is we had a center for Stevens-Johnson and wrote some really good papers and some good experience. Love what's going on in the skin. There's so much happening on people's bodies. And I then sort of started narrowing down what I liked and I did a fellowship at the Scripps Hospital in San Diego, California. Looks like a beautiful hospital because it's next to a golf course, but it's just the same old stinky hospital like anything else inside there. The Mohs Center and Melanoma Center was a mecca for a lot of people with skin cancer, did many cases there. One day my wife said, just take a picture of your average day. And I no joke, this was my average day. This guy came in, said he had an enlarging pimple. It was a squamous cell carcinoma, resected till we finally got clear margins, pulled a forehead flap down and reconstructed the side of his nose. Took pictures of it, came home, showed my wife, and she was impressed. Spent a lot of time with lasers and cosmetics. They have a lot of lasers, big center for research there. And also a lot of time in superficial veins. There's a lot of skin disease that involves the veins. We're gonna talk a little bit about that. So my practice here in Ogden is largely dermatology, skin cancer with Mohs surgery and reconstruction, lane vein varicosities, and I do enjoy cosmetics. I never thought I would, but it's surprisingly rewarding. I'll show you a few things to kind of give you a peek into that. Dermatology is so much more to skin than what's on the surface, because kids walk in, for instance, and you'll think alopecia areata, they're just losing a little patch of hair, you'll be okay. But we can miss these. These can be a scarring condition of tinea capitis. They're very, very frustrating. Hair and nail diseases, actually pretty intimidating, even to dermatologists. You don't want to send a kid out with this for the rest of life. But one little treatment of terbinafine, and he's doing better, and he doesn't get any scarring. Vitiligo, very serious condition for those who have darker skin, especially from the Indian subcontinent. It's almost seen as a sign of poor birthright, and it is a very distressing situation for patients to recognize. Little tidbit for primary care, if you do see someone with new vitiligo, about 17% have concurrent thyroid disease, and that's often missed. You're so interested in the vitiligo. So we like to screen their thyroid, at least with a TSH and a free T4. This is a surprisingly common disease. Our entire skin is held to us by millions of tiny little carpet tacks. They're microscopic, they hold it to us. If you just take it for granted that your skin's just there for you all the time, when it starts to fall off, it is scary and it's actually lethal and fatal. Pemphigus vulgaris happens to young, healthy people out of the blue. It's an autoimmune disease attacking the small carpet tacks that hold the skin, and they just start to slough off, large amounts of blistering, very painful secondary infections, and a lot of comorbidities. We see a fair amount of this with the gardeners here in Utah, and it's a deep fungal infection. You get a little prick of a rose thorn at the wrong time, and it can turn into quite a problem. It's super fun, though, when you walk in the room and recognize it for them, because they're scared to death. They think they're going to lose their hand, and again, a little treatment of an antifungal, and they think you're a miracle worker. I'm also amazed with how much the skin is a window to so many other diseases, and there's entire talks. In fact, if you go to the Academy of Dermatology, there's a whole day just for skin disease that can help recognize internal disease. But some of you may recognize pretibial myxedema with Graves' disease, and it is really rewarding. Every door is an adventure with dermatology, because you knock on the door, you walk in, they have a little rash, and if you can point out, well, actually, your rash is probably connected to Graves' disease, have you had that worked up, and send them to the right person, and be able to help patients in easy ways. And then just good old acne. I can't tell you how much I enjoy seeing a 17-year-old's acne improve. It is a very, very fun way to spend your day. And I remember I was with an anesthesiologist when I was in medical school, and he said, oh, how are you going to stand being derm another acne? And I said, well, how do you stand being an anesthesiologist putting another person to sleep? But the point is that it's not another acne. It's very rewarding, and it's severe, and it's a big deal. And just a little side note here, and I want Ogden to be the state of the art with treating acne. No more of this years on amoxicillin and no one's watching them. No more of this, you'll grow through it, it's fine, I went through it. It doesn't have to be that way anymore. Isotretinoin's been around for 35 years now. It's not a new medicine, and it doesn't have secret deep myths with it. I have sent a few patients to get isotretinoin, and I had a pharmacist here in Ogden tell the patient, I would never put my child on that medicine. So she came back pretty distressed. There is no connection with depression. There is no connection with Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis. Every 10 years, it becomes an extremely hot topic in the media. Oh my gosh, we're doing this to our America's children. And then we do the research and we do huge studies. We're talking huge studies, and they can't find a connection. We don't want to depress America's children. In fact, if anything, in my experience over several thousand patients, it's an antidepressant. Those are the happiest patient you'll ever see. Their hair is back and they're trying out for sports, and they're a different person. For a while there, I had a doctor say, aren't you worried about isotretinoin and ulcerative colitis? And I said, where'd you learn that? Just out of curiosity. Oh, a late night TV commercial. Late night TV commercials from lawyers are not for public education. They are not the source of education, and they shouldn't be for the Ogden Medical Surgical Society. The meta-analysis, which is a huge study on all studies, most of them come from the GI literature, by the way, show no connection. In fact, we've, if anything, elucidated the fact that long-term antibiotics for kids with severe acne is very detrimental. I'll do about 2 to 6 months, and I'm done. That's it. No more doxycycline, minocycline, amoxicillin. We're hurting the flora a lot more than we're hurting people with this high-dose vitamin A. On isotretinoin, there's no magic to it. It's just a high-dose vitamin A. It puts all of the glands, all of the cells on the same synchronized growth rate. And I just really wanted to emphasize that. Please don't turn away this kid because you think isotretinoin isn't a good medicine. Cutaneous oncology. Skin cancer happens from, I like to make this list because it looks scary. You can grow a cancer from any cell in the skin. There is so much happening. There are many, many skin cancers that we're not going to cover. And just a recommendation for all of you out there, if your patient shows you something that's new and changing, just get it checked. Biopsy yourself, numb and get a little piece. We far too often say, I don't know, just watch it. And a cancer that arises from the blood vessels of the skin can be devastating. Angiosarcoma. There's just so many skin cancers that get missed because of the not recognizing how many different types there are. But luckily for us, there's three that are most common, and most of you are taught this in some sort of training program at some point. Basal cell carcinoma, squamous cell carcinoma, and melanoma. Basal cell carcinoma, extremely common, especially amongst Caucasians. Almost all skin cancers, including these top three, are related to UV radiation. Luckily for us, most of the severe ultraviolet light that comes from the sun gets filtered off by our ozone layer. But a lot of it does pass through. UVB gets through to us, and UVA makes it all the way through the car window. So all of those types of ultraviolet light are DNA damaging in some way. Certain family lines, not a problem. Fix the DNA, move on. Certain family lines, of which we have in Utah, the cancer progresses and you do grow tumors pretty easy. But there's other causes too. Radiation exposure, x-ray for acne. So a long time ago, I don't know if anyone has happened in this room, maybe don't want to raise your hand, but when you had acne when you're young, they were shooting x-rays at it. We have so many of these patients now just loaded with skin cancers in those areas. Another common thing was back in the day, they would measure the kids' shoes by sticking them in basically a fluoroscope, and they would see if the kid's shoes fit. They'd see if his bones fit the size of the shoe. The parents would look in and say, yep, that looks good. We have a lot of older people with skin cancer on their toes and feet, and it seems to be a more aggressive area. Chronic wounds. If you have a patient who has a wound that's not healing, please get a biopsy. Anything, especially over a year, just get a biopsy. Very common to have a squamous cell carcinoma arise from a previous trauma. And then good old HPV causes warts, causes cancer, causes cervical cancer, causes skin cancer. Something to consider. Severe sunburns at a young age, much higher risk for skin cancer. So we try to teach people, if you've had sunburns, at least try to watch your ABCs, try to be on top of it, be aware of it. But the quickest response that we usually get is, wait, don't I need some of that sun? Don't I need my vitamin D? The science is pretty clear on this. You need some. About 5 to 10 minutes a day on your sunlight on your arms and face will create the vitamin D needed. But after that point, you actually start to degrade it. So if you're spending 3 hours in the sun baking, you're just degrading it as it's made with the heat process. It's just the answer that's boring to all things, is that moderation is usually the right answer. A little bit of sun is good. Too much is bad. Basal cell carcinomas like to grow. It's the pimple that won't heal. They do not metastasize very commonly. The number is 1 in 1,000. I would say that is dead on. I will see about 1,000 patients, and I swear on the 1,000th one, healthy person, no problems with their immune system, they have lymph nodes that are positive. It's really uncanny when it does, but it does happen. They're slow growing and you've got lots of time to treat them, but they will eventually erode bone and cartilage and become painful. Classic question from people in your profession is, I got a 93-year-old, she's got a slow growing basal cell, do I ignore it? The answer is no, not because I want to be more busy. The answer is because that 93-year-old is going to be 94, whether you know it or not, and the comorbidity of a stinky, infected tumor on the back of their ear is just downright wrong. I can fix this in about 2.5 hours in my office, give them a pat on the head and have a nurse visit them at home. There's no reason to allow these to just sit there and fester. I like the word fester, by the way. Squamous cell carcinomas are a little more aggressive. They're the second most common. They're the bump that won't heal. Again, they can pop up pretty darn fast, and they have a higher rate of metastases, particularly on the lip and penis. People tell you they have a new lesion on the lip and penis. That always gets a biopsy. It doesn't matter if it even looks benign. Eventually, they will erode. This guy came into us because he didn't like the odor, and he just took his hat off, and I said, whoa, get a towel, get a camera. We're taking a real picture here. This is great. It's tough. I mean, he came in way too late. We can't quite fix that. Melanoma is the third most common, but the most lethal. Now, here's another thing that we get questions from people in your group. Wait a minute, aren't we just biopsying too much? Aren't we just finding more melanomas? It is true. We are finding more melanomas. We probably do biopsy too much. But the other side of the coin is the death rate for melanoma continues to climb in the United States despite all of our biopsy. So we have higher death rates of younger aged groups. So it's not the 70-year-olds. It's the 30, 40, and 50-year-olds that we have higher lethal rates in melanomas, particularly in Caucasians. 1 in 5 have metastatic disease. These are mets that are in transit along the leg. They tend to go along certain pathways. One patient in the United States dies every hour of melanoma. There are many subtypes. There's two that I want you to remember. Insight2 is 100% curable, and it's the same thing with brand new breast cancer and the brand new colon cancer. Catch it early, 100% curable, everybody's happy. Once that it's beyond Insight2, it is technically never cured. You never tell a melanoma patient they're cured, they're a survivor, but we all have patients who it's recurred on later. There's a nodular subtype, and this is the other one I wanted you to remember, amelanotic. This is kind of a terrifying one. This is the one that keeps dermatologists up at night. It's the pink, non-healing red bump. You wouldn't even think of melanoma. You'd think, well, you probably bumped yourself on the door. Let's check in a few weeks. Very, very aggressive subtype, doesn't make any melanin, something worth getting a small biopsy and finding. So then fine, remove all my moles. That's the answer we get. This is the patient who comes in and says, take these all off. Can't take them all off. It's way too many moles. Most of them are fine. 50% arise from old moles. 50% of melanomas arise just out of the skin, out of nowhere. So it doesn't necessarily help to take moles off. You can look at the ABCDs, of which you should be familiar with. Are they asymmetric? Is the border nice and sharp, or has it been scalloped? The picture on the right shows you that the immune system's really fighting back at that. You can see bites being taken from the side. Are the colors mixed? Is the diameter pretty big? And then E, is it evolving? Is it changed a lot? Now, every single one of you in this room have one of the ABCDs, E's on your moles. I'm sure you do. It's when you have four or five of these features that you definitely want a biopsy performed. But you need to see your dermatologist or at least your healthcare provider that's familiar with it. This was a Navy officer when I was in San Diego who came in with he called it his blueberry. He said, that's not a blueberry, man. That's a melanoma, I need to biopsy that. I'm way afraid of needles. And you can see he's got a lot of musculature. He was a big guy, he was in his 30s, he was healthy, and he refused biopsy, he said he'd think about it. Well, he went home with an X-Acto knife in his bathtub and went ahead and took it out himself with some Jack Daniels, and then came in with a little Tupperware and said, will you test this for me? And he actually later died, about 8 months later. He had widely metastatic disease, and it was very frustrating. Not that we would have saved him with a biopsy that day, but he really ignored all the signs and symptoms. So Mohs surgery comes along. Fred Mohs is dealing with all these skin cancers in Wisconsin in the 50s and 60s. It's overwhelming. So Fred Mohs says, there's gotta be a better way, because currently, and traditionally, with a wide local excision around a lot of skin cancers, you have a 15% recurrence rate. 15% is not acceptable if it's your nose. You do not want that kind of recurrence rate. And everyone was dancing around the cancer. Go wide, go far. He said, let's treat it right the first time. He said, let's actually go at the cancer, map it, find out what shape it is, and then be more exact. Because if you don't treat it right the first time, I always tell patients, it's like weeds under concrete. If it grows back, it is really hard to treat once the scar tissue is formed over the cancer. So he called it a novel approach to orienting the tissue and using fast frozen tissue processing to more precisely and more accurately remove the tumor. That's a big, long sentence. What does that mean? Basically, when you take a piece of skin out of anyone and it's sent for traditional pathology, it's bread loaf. It's sectioned and little pieces of bread are lifted up and we say, well, we've got these, let me show you. These margins are clear, and these margins are clear, and these margins appear clear, but skin cancer loves to grow in a unpredicted fashion, and you get missed margins in about 15% of the patients. So instead of doing bread loaf, Dr. Mohs said, let's treat it like a pie. Takes a pie, you flip the tumor over, we use a very special technique to carve away the edges of it and check 100% of the margins, map them, and then we know exactly where the process of the cancer is. The research was done over about 600,000 cases, and the recurrence rate went down to less than 1%. It's 0.02% for recurrence rate on skin cancers. And the holes were much, much smaller. Fred Mohs almost lost his license in Wisconsin for doing this because he was so against the stream. He was going right at the cancer. Ended up becoming a very valuable treatment that we all have, and many in this room may have already had this treatment. This is a little case of Mohs that you could go through. We see the tumor. The tumor is then marked out, a very small excision around just the tumor, then it's placed onto a map. We color code it. We then go to the microscope, and we can actually see little fragments of tumor still extending at one of the margins. We mark it on our map, and then when we go back, we just take that one spot. We don't take anything else. We leave all those healthy cells there, and when you're done, you have a nice small defect, and you can repair it versus losing a big chunk of someone's nose. And the rates, when to do it, the rates have been very good. When to do it is very important to remember. If it's on the nose or eyes, you need to do Mohs surgery probably there. If it's on the genitals, somewhere very important, precious real estate. Large tumors, this was a rash this patient was being treated for. If it's a rash and it's not getting better, please biopsy it. He was being treated for his eczema, very large basal cell, and anything over 2 centimeters. Aggressive tumors on the lip, like I said, this was a guy who was sent to me for treatment of his herpes labialis. And I said, how long you had this? A year and a half. I'm like, that's not herpes labialis. And biopsy showed squamous cell. We started Mohs, positive margins down the muscle. We just continue until we see negative margins. And then he actually did fine. We advanced his inner lip, and this is just a week later, and he looks great now. Maybe he dribbles his coffee a little. And in any recurrent tumor, if a tumor has grown back, it needs Mohs surgery. It doesn't matter where or what size. So this guy actually came in for scar revision, which we do a lot of. It was a basal cell, and we had to get clear margins. And interestingly, he didn't want to repair. He just let it heal in, and it looked great. So he was happy with his scar revision, too. When we're done with skin cancer, a lot of times the patient's already numb in our office. A lot of times we have plastics with us in the office. It's supposed to be a very easy visit for the patient, and we do reconstruction at that time. And the beauty of reconstruction is if you have a laceration in the emergency room and it's open, you can put some stitches in it. But if you have missing skin, you have to be able to be trained in how to slide the skin around to fix that and repair that. And there's ways to do it where this is my favorite part of my day, where we can really hide the scars. This is at 1 week follow-up, and she looks great to this day. She was devastated. She's a young, pretty woman, and she looks very normal to this day. So reconstruction is really advanced, and patients can be treated. Even if they do get scars, we get great results with lasering scars and do a lot of lasering scars at our office to really fine polish these things. The rest of my talk has to do more with leg veins and cosmetics, which isn't as important to me. When I was sitting at night, the two things I really wanted to hit was Mohs surgery and the use of isotretinoin. So if you leave my talk and that's all you remember, and you remember that I had to stand up here for 5 minutes in quiet with just crickets and bacon crunching in the background, then that would be happy. That would be all I'd need. And if you have any questions, please feel free to approach me or email me or call me. I love talking about this, and thank you for your time.